driving the lane, crosses up Van Hula, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas State for three. No,
that's good.
They got it. Kansas State for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends, The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stauder, the sports director here at WZND, and once again, we are back in triple threat formation for another great show. We are joined by my regular co-host, Mr. Joey Dwyer of WZND's production department of the Quad City Storm.
And do you want to know what we're going to do today, Leo?
What are we going to do?
We're going to hashtag seek shelter, because the Quad City Storm took game one of the semifinals, trying to look for the sweep in Peoria this weekend.
Do you want to give people a plug on how they can listen to that game?
Oh, yeah. So if you're trying to listen to the Quad City Storm, you have to go to QCSportsNet.com, or you can subscribe to Hockey TV, or if you're in the arena, tune in to 100.1 FM. We've got an in-arena FM transmitter, so a lot of high-tech stuff. If you're still carrying around your Sony Walkman, that's a great way to do it.
That's great. And our producer is, as always, the one and only Mr. Joe Kennedy of TV 10 News, of the Naperville Trolley Company. The man, the myth, the legend, Joe Kennedy.
And I do got to say, Joe, I still do carry my Walkman around.
If you're in Peoria this weekend, tune in to 100.1 FM.
I'm walking around.
Only,
okay.
But that's only if you're in the Peoria Civic Center.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're not going to be able to hear it. It's very low frequency.
This is great information to know. Can't wait for that game. But we are excited for Joey, because Joey lives and breathes for Quad City Storm hockey this semester, so it's been a blast.
I love minor league hockey, man. Let me tell you. Well, I'll talk about it next week when we do our big farewell show or whatever, but God, minor league hockey is just the best.
Oh, yeah. And we like seeing Joey happy, too, and we have a show that we hope will make him happy tonight, as we're going to have Allie Schrock, the MVC Golfer of the Year of the Conference Championship team, coming on in just a few minutes. Then Blake Bogart's going to come on the show. We're going to talk about some of our favorite games we've ever been to, which will be kind of cool, because as Joey just alluded to, he's seen some wild minor league hockey games. And then we'll round things out by talking about the team that occupies Wrigley Field in Chicago. That would be the Chicago Cubs. And so we got a loaded show. Let's start things off with some Redbird baseball, though, keeping things on the diamond, because they had an interesting past week since we last talked. They dropped 2-3 to Valpo. They beat Milwaukee in 11 innings on Tuesday. And that Valpo series was one that was interesting, because Valpo, while no means is one of the top teams in the Valley, I wouldn't say would be the lowly team that I think we anticipated going in, because you look at their lineup, there are a lot of underclassmen, but they still have some competitive players. Caleb Hanna's son of the Indiana State head coach, a really good player at third base. He had a really good series. Caleb Schmack, the Valparaiso coach's son, they have two Valley coaches' kids on their teams, and they had some youngsters that really just kind of lit things up at the plate. And they kind of woke up the Redbirds, caught them, I think, when they weren't expecting it.
And Schmack also has to be MVC first team all name.
The puns you could go on with Schmack.
It's incredible.
But with Valpo, I was kind of surprised on the first game on Friday, their star pitcher, Fields, I believe, came in. And he was the one pitcher on the Valpo staff that kind of struggled throughout the rest of the series. If you look at the next two games, they only gave up 3 runs in the last 2 games. And it was kind of surprising to see that. And the Redbird bats just kind of, like, once again, just went cold and things. But Valpo had a very solid bullpen that showed out well.
I think that just kind of shows that while Valpo's one of the teams at the bottom of the MVC standings in baseball, they're still competitive. We've been saying it all season, the Valley is just so tough this season. So that's why these non-conference games, wins over Arkansas and Purdue and Illinois, matter that much more, because the Valley's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to get that conference tournament championship. So being able to strengthen your case for an at-large bid is just so important, because the Valley runs very deep.
But Valpo, coming into this series, though, they lost 5 in a row, and then they lost 6 in a row.
They played Indiana State, the top team in the Valley, very competitively. I think that was something you look at, 3 losses, but going into that series, they played against the top teams very well. And one of the more interesting lineup decisions that paid off for the Redbirds on Friday was taking the heart attack, Jared Hart, friend of the Red Zone, and switching him from the closer, basically, to the starting pitcher on Friday, and he excelled in that, took a no-hitter into the sixth inning and really just shut down the Beacons lineup. Talking a little bit to Coach Holm before the game, he was saying his mindset was just, he's got a sub 2 ERA, he's got some of the nastiest stuff on the staff, let's just have him start and see what happens. Take your best pitcher and put him in a position to showcase his skills, and it really worked.
Because we see that a lot now, especially in some instances in college baseball where teams, you know, get these leads and they don't have their best pitchers pitching, especially when you're outside of like the big Power 5 conferences. Your top guys sometimes are going to be in the relief, and you're not going to be using them. And when Jared Hart wasn't being used, and as your best pitcher, as a coach, you're saying, Leo, like, you got to go ahead and put in your best guy. And he shows out and does it really well.
Now, thinking about it, Holm kind of did that in 2019, the year they went to the NCAA Regionals with Colton Johnson. He was the closer to start the year. They used him as, like, an Andrew Miller type, like a 6-9 out inning save guy. Or a closer type where he could be a closer pitches multiple innings. And then they just put him in the starting rotation, partly out of need, but partly because he's your best guy, and just have him go up, eat innings, and set the tone for a team. And I'm really excited to see if they keep doing this with Hart, because he's got some nasty stuff.
And so for this next series against Bradley, I think one of the main, obviously one of the main focuses for the Redbirds is going to be getting back on track in Valley play. That win over Milwaukee was huge earlier this week. But now you kind of have to shift focus a little bit and really lock in, because like you're saying, the Valley is so good this year.
And even Bradley, they beat Dallas Baptist 2 out of 3 games last weekend, so they're not going to be a pushover either.
And that's the great thing about the conference this year, is there are so many teams that could be competitive, like Indiana State, Dallas Baptist, ISU, Bradley. All those teams have been playing so well, so I really think it's important for the Redbirds to come out very strong here at home against Bradley.
And it's just... You're talking about how deep the Valley is, but it's gotten to this point now where you're kind of getting into the big part of the Valley schedule and everything, and it's just the consistency, and like it just doesn't seem like a team that could, I guess, go out there and win the MVC tournament at this exact moment right now. I mean, a lot can still change, but just looking at it right now from that viewpoint, it just is a little shaky looking at it, especially with the way it started at the beginning of the year.
Well, Colin Wyman was on TV10 Sports Zone on Monday talking with our good friend Rick Schweizer about the season. He said they have the talent offensively, and they have some really good pitchers, but it seems like it's either one or the other. Sometimes the pitchers are firing, sometimes the bats are putting up 10 runs. If they could put together a complete game, I think they're probably one of the top teams in the Valley.
For sure.
It's not like last year where it's just the 1 through 5 hitters getting it done. 1 through 9, they can really produce in the lineup, and they have a lot of options pitching-wise, but it's just getting both of those to perform on the same day has been kind of a struggle.
And there's so many factors that go into that, right? Like youth and inexperience is a big problem when it comes in terms of inconsistency, and that's kind of what the Birds are struggling with, and that's not really an easy fix. You can't have guys all of a sudden gain these 2 years of experience and really start to play well. But I think, like you said, it's just a matter of them coming together as a team and being able to perform at their best all at the same time. And I think that over the course of the season and heading into the tournament, that's going to be something that's really important, that last stretch before we hit the conference tournament.
And one more thing I wanted to touch on with baseball, too, was the 11-inning game against Milwaukee on Tuesday, beating them 4-3. Jake McCaw had essentially the game-winning home run in the top of the 11th. He's someone who's, I think, has really impressed me this season. The fact that he leads the team in RBIs when you're on a team with Ryan Cermak, someone that had 10 RBIs in a game, and you're still the leader in that category with your team. McCaw's putting together a really solid season. He does a good job of mixing contact and power at the plate. I saw D1 Baseball had an article about him today saying he could be like a sneaky good pickup on a day three for the MLB draft. He's someone that's really impressed me, and I think he's kind of been most consistent Redbird this season, and it's cool to see. Like, he's a local guy. He plays first base for the Redbirds, and is just really producing and kind of flying under the radar with that.
Yeah, him and Connor Olson, I think those two.
Yeah.
I mean, just what Ryan Cermak's done, though, is just it deserves all the recognition and everything, like, no matter what, on the broadcast or everything, on social media. But Connor Olson and McCaw, what they've been able to do together outside, it's been
the funny thing about Olson, because – I was broadcasting the Saturday game on ESPN Plus, humble brag there, but with Scott Sudikoff, and all game we've been talking about, the Redbirds have 6 straight games with a home run, and they were just getting shut down in that game on Saturday. And then Olson comes up with 2 outs in the bottom of the 9th. Redbirds were down by like 10 runs, I think it was. And then he just jacks one over the fence. So we're like, the streak goes on, but the Redbirds are still losing by 10. Like,
and that's just how it goes, though. Yeah. Like, we're talking about it. The consistency inside the offense and the pitching, it's just hard to match up together. And especially going down the next part of their schedule, I mean, it's tough. You got the Bradley series rivalry game. Indiana is going to come to town. Dallas Baptist, Iowa, you still got to play. And then Indiana again in Southern Illinois. So, I mean.
Did you see, though, they rescheduled 80s night for that Indiana game.
Oh, thank God. Yeah. I just saw that. Yeah, they just put it there. And then there's three theme nights this weekend, too, with the RSO Appreciation Superhero theme on Saturday and then the Sandlot theme on Sunday. That sounds like a lot of fun, going a little Sandlot theme game against Bradley, too, on Sunday.
Do you have a favorite Sandlot character, Joe?
I got to go Smalls. I don't know.
That's a good one. I always liked Hamilton Porter, but Smalls is a classic, too. That's tough to beat. But getting back on track, this is big for the Redbirds because it's going to be tough to make up some of those wins in the back half of the season when you got to face Dallas Baptist, when you got to face Southern. Even Missouri State, they're, I think, winless currently in Valley play, they had some big non-conference wins. Mm-hmm. The Valley's so tough, and that's why I think this Valpo series could be one that you really look back and regret dropping two of these three.
Yeah, but end of the day, you just really need to get to the conference championship tournament.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, anything could happen, especially with the caliber team. We've been saying it all this show, and then throughout the year, they have the players, the pitchers that can do it. It's just going together as one.
That's my thing, too. I'm really not worried about this team. I think they are deep enough where if they get hot at the right time, because that's all baseball is. It's being hot and healthy in the right time, and you could do whatever. But it will be interesting to see what happens. A reminder, if you want to listen, if you can't make it out to Duffy Bass Field for Sandlot game or any of the other ones, we will have the calls here on WZND. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Tomorrow's game starts off at 4:50, so you're going to want to listen to those. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Allie Schrock's going to join the show, so stick around. You're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hey, this is Dickie B, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stauderher, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy. I know we promised you the Allie Schrock interview. That's coming up. We were just having some difficulties on our end. So instead, we're going to have Blake Borgard on the show. Blake has a really cool idea. This is something that I think we talked about maybe doing on Red Zone the semester where we didn't have sports in the fall of 20. But Blake, tell us a little bit about what you want to bring to the show tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you guys for having me once again. So normally you guys are the analysts. You guys are the announcers. You guys are the writers. But I kind of want to hear more of a fan perspective from you guys today. So I wanted to hear your favorite professional sports memory. You know, it could be a game you've called, a game you've been to, or maybe even just something you've watched, and just a fun story to go along with it.
And I really appreciate, before we get into the segment, I really appreciate the title of analyst and writer, because if you ask Leo he'd call me a meatball fan like everybody else. So I really appreciate the accolades to start it off.
I guess I'll go first. We'll just go around the horn here.
Should we do it like games we've been at? Like,
yeah,
let's do like games we've witnessed as a fan.
Because I feel like there's a difference between a game you go to as a fan and a game you're working. We're calling a game, it's you're there for work. You're making sure everything goes right. Not that you don't care about who wins or loses, because you do in some cases, but you're more so making sure you put out the best product. But when you're there as a fan, that's where you really care. And, you know, I've been thinking about this for a long time, the first one to start with, and I think it just doesn't get any bigger than this. I was at the game in 2015 where the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup on home ice at the United Center with my dad. It was a really cool night because we've had season tickets since 2008, and we've been going to games together, me and him, for as long as I can remember. And so getting to see that was a really cool experience, but there was a lot of fun that went into it because I don't know if anybody remembers this, but the night they won the cup, it was a horrible rainstorm.
Yeah,
tornado sirens were going off in Chicago, and so my dad was working that day. So like, I was 15 at the time, so I couldn't drive. So we'd do this thing where my mom would drive me up to my dad's work, drop me off, and then we'd go to the game. And so he texted me or called me earlier in the day and said, "It's gonna rain. Bring ponchos and umbrellas." But like, when he called me, it was sunny and dry. And then as we're driving the game, you know, dark clouds start gathering. It starts raining. I start hearing sirens. I didn't bring ponchos or umbrellas. So then, you know, we get in the car. He doesn't realize it. Get in my dad's car. And then as we parked a few blocks away from the arena for free because, you know, save a few bucks here and there. And then so as we're getting out of the car, my dad goes, "Where are the ponchos and umbrellas?" And I forget that. I said, "I forgot them." And so then there was lots of yelling and swearing. And we're walking like four or five blocks to the United Center, just getting soaked. And then we're trying to cross.
Can I ask, just for the visual, whose jerseys were you wearing?
I was wearing Marian Hossa. I think my dad was wearing either as Brian Campbell or as Brian Pickle.
Okay, thank you.
But we were trying to cross, I think it was Madison Street, and there was this huge puddle, and we just both stepped right in it. Our shoes got soaked. So then that led to even more swearing from my dad. And, like, the whole game, our shoes were just squishing and soaked. And it was a really fun memory, but, like, that chaos, that father-son bonding running through the game before is something I'll always take away from that too, because that just could have ruined a
That's
great
so
night.
Fun, and then so you got to experience the game. Did you go to the parade afterwards?
I did. I didn't go to the game with my, or the parade with my dad. I went to the game with a couple of my friends from hockey, and that was really cool too. We scalped some tickets to get in the Soldier Field and watched the rally. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
I gotta ask really quickly, Leo. You didn't freeze being around all that ice and all that water on you?
There might have been some frost on my shoes, but I got through it.
All right, so my turn now. We're going this way.
We'll go.
Okay, so mine's got to be 2016. It's October. Cubs are about to play the Dodgers for game one of the NLCS. And at this point, it was like I was really trying to go to the game. I was like, Mom, please, I'll do anything. I'll do anything to go to the game. So I find out, I go to the game. We get there. We get the tickets. Game started. I just get thrown in because at this time the bleachers, I get a bleacher seat, and those are assigned seats in the playoffs. So,
and quick question. So you've told us this story. Did you and your mom, when you guys go to games, you buy the will call tickets that people don't pick up? Is that what we did for this game too?
Yeah. So that's what we did for this game too. That's a big thing that I've learned throughout from my mom. It's just if you go to games and you get a ticket at the box office, you get it for face value, sometimes even less if it's like the middle of the game or the game's still going on. So
this is a great life
hack
too.
That's a great hack for anybody listening out there that's not my mom. But yeah, go back to the game I was at. It was game one, NLCS, and I was 16 at the time, and I was in the bleachers all alone because my mom got a different ticket in the bleachers, different area, and it was just the craziest game ever. Met a couple of guys, one dude named Doug, and he was this awesome 50-year-old man, but it was just an awesome, nice guy. And I was just talking to them, like, and just the vibes were awesome there, and it was a crazy game. Javier Baez stole home. Miguel Montero hit pretty much a walk-off grand slam to, and then Dexter Fowler followed that up with another home run that everyone seems to forget. But just the vibes in the stadium, it was just awesome, and just chanting "Go Cubs, go!" and it was just a great atmosphere. Something that I've probably like never been around, and something I'll remember for rest of my life, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a great, great moment, great memory.
I was really hoping when you said Javi Baez, we would have an El Mago sound effect or something.
I
like
wish
that
I had a little magician thing. It was sick. Yeah, it was crazy. No one was expecting that.
Love that story. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that before,
so
it's cool to hear. So my story, I think, would be my family, we're pretty big Penn State fans.
Ooh.
And so we went to the Big Ten Championship game in Indy in 2017. It was against Wisconsin. I don't know if you guys know anything
about
this.
Was this the one where the turf broke and like they had
that game.
Who was playing again?
It was Wisconsin and Penn State in the championship. And so Penn State is like fringe like playoff team. They ended up missing it and they ended up playing in the Rose Bowl against USC, losing it. I don't like to talk about that. So basically, you know, there's a lot riding on this game. So we get there and we're down like 20 something to like 7 or 10 at halftime.
Yeah.
And like the mood is completely depleted in the stadium. And I forget how old I was. I could have been like 15 or something like that. And like this like section of depressed Penn State fans and families. And I'm like, guys, I'm like hyping people up, man. I'm like, guys, we've been a second half team all season. We're going to do it. So we come back out, man, and I remember Trace McSorley threw this bomb down to Mike Gesicki, matched up against some poor little safety, and that was the end of it, man. We ended up taking the game, and my favorite memory from that game was the final touchdown that Penn State scored was to Saquon Barkley on a wheel route.
Yeah.
T.J. Watt was in coverage against him. I didn't know who T.J. Watt was at the time. But basically, we were right in front of, like, the corner where, like, the ball came down in Saquon's hands. And I think you can see, like, when you're watching back the celebratory, like, on CBS or whatever it was, I think you can see a little hint of me and the boys up in the bleachers up there. So that would probably be my coolest story that
I
got.
I gotta ask, have you been to a game at Happy Valley at Penn State? Cause that is one of the coolest atmospheres in all of college football. I think especially like a whiteout game, like, it just looks so electric.
So we've talked about that a couple of times, but we've never had the opportunity to, obviously, school year and everything like that. Expensive to travel out there and then COVID, but a whiteout game, man, that would be
bucket
every
list.
Time I think of that, I think of the Michigan game where they had to call a timeout like on the first play of the game
2 years ago, right?
I think
before the COVID hit, I think. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, that's gone like viral so many times. Like I've seen that like throughout this year. You know, when like sports goes dead, it's like, oh, who remembers this game where Michigan had to call a timeout? Like the amount of noise just coming through like a video through a tweet, it's just like, imagine being there. Like, that would be – college atmospheres are probably, I would say, the best atmospheres.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, diehard fans there.
Yeah.
All right, is it my turn?
So
my original...
He's got a Quad City Storm.
No. My original story was really close to Leo's. I was at the game, the Blackhawks game in 2010 when they clinched the sweep of the Western Conference Final. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to change it up. Because
did it also rain that day?
It did not rain that day. Oh, that is the day that Duncan Keith got all his teeth knocked out, though.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the funniest experience that I have is my Grandpa Paul, who's my dad's dad. He is... a Notre Dame alum. He is a huge Notre Dame fan. My dad is the youngest of five. Three of his siblings went to Notre Dame. He and my dad came to the venerable Illinois State University.
Hall of Famer.
School of Communications,
yes,
Hall of
he
Famer,
is.
Greg Dwyer. So we go to this. We used to go every year, me, my dad, my grandpa, to a Notre Dame football game.
Right.
And I can't even remember who they were playing because I was like 11. And it started off, the trip started off rough because on the way to South Bend, I ate an entire can of Pringles and we had to pull over on the side of the road because I had to vomit all of the Pringles that I just ate. And so Grandpa Paul was furious.
Yeah.
He was furious that I was wasting time because he's a guy who likes to get there early.
Right.
We like to be there an hour before the gates open. And so we get there and Grandpa Paul had gotten these tickets for free.
Yeah.
So he didn't know where they were. We get in there. We're sitting in the middle of the Notre Dame student section.
Oh,
so it's like a 10-year-old me, my grandfather, who at the time is probably 78.
Yeah.
And then my dad. And the three of us are sitting in the student section, none of us at an appropriate age to be sitting in the student section. And I remember I was so out of my depth because they did all this stuff that I could not comprehend. At one point, they're like chucking marshmallows like throughout the student section. What the hell was that? I had no idea what that was.
Yeah.
But
how old were you?
I was 10.
10, okay.
So like I was just floored. But that was, I cherish that memory because that was like my first college experience as a kid in fifth grade. It was an incredible game, and I think Notre Dame killed whoever they were playing because I remember just being in a good mood. It was like a beautiful, like
fall day, you know,
late autumn day. Yeah. I just had a sweatshirt on. It was a great time, and just the getting to watch my 78-year-old grandfather in the student section.
Go ahead,
and like he was getting after
awesome.
like Grandpa Paul is a silver fox.
Yeah.
Like he can still move,
okay.
Or at least back then. He's getting a little older now, so his tennis ability has left him a little bit. But it was just a great experience, and it really made me fall in love with collegiate sports and the college atmosphere.
That's kind of like the same origin story I have for like my college football fandom would be my grandpa, well, not a Notre Dame alum, but a big Notre Dame fan, took me to a Notre Dame-Michigan game. I think it was 2010, and it was the first college football game I'd really ever been to that I could comprehend.
Yeah.
And it was a really cool experience. Michigan ended up rallying in like the fourth quarter to get a win. Denard Robinson was the quarterback, and I don't think I ever told my grandpa while he was still with us that he was one of my favorite college football players of all time because he hated Michigan, but I loved Robinson. So it was really cool to get to see him play against Notre Dame at that stadium in that same experience, because I think that's, as we're all telling these stories, it's the experience of going to games like with your family and stuff. It is a cool experience, that fandom being passed down from grandfather to father to son, and getting to share that all. I think that's just a really cool part of it all.
So in the same vein of the conversation, let's transition to your favorite game that you've ever called. Because you were saying, it's a different experience entirely having to be there to work, but there are still a lot of like special moments that can happen when you're calling a game.
That's such a tough one, because I could go so many different ways for this. I think the game we did where the Redbirds punched their ticket to the NCAA tournament, that was really cool. Just the fact that we had seen that team all season, that they, see them going from playing in a half-filled Redbird arena early in the year in a non-conference game to a sold-out stadium in Iowa City was really awesome. And it was a really good game, too. But, I mean, just thinking about so many other games I did, even some of the games I saw this summer, like I called a no-hitter. That was really cool. But I still think that maybe that one we did, maybe because it's so recent that sticks in my mind, the Redbirds versus you and I, like clinching the conference tournament was pretty sweet. Like that, it doesn't feel like it's my favorite yet because it just happened, but that was something that was pretty special.
And it's like you'll look back on it in 5 years, and you'll be like, wow, we were really in Hawkeye Carver Arena courtside, like watching Caitlin Clark
play. It
is
crazy.
Like that was insane.
My game that I'm going to say is the Bucknell versus Illinois State men's basketball game. Illinois State won 105-100 in overtime. It was ranked as the third most exciting game by KenPom, which is one of the most followed college basketball analytics, just websites and everything. So that was the number three most craziest game. But what was so crazy about it, I kind of like forgot at certain points, especially towards the end of the game. I was doing it with B-Mac, Brendan McInerney. Like, I forgot at points, like, I wasn't a fan at the game. Because, like, it just, it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. It was like when I was at an NBA game, and, like, they just kept making every shot. They had one player, Andrew Funk, had 38 points. Antonio Reeves only had 12 points in this game. Like, and that's another crazy part of looking at this game and just trying to call it with everything going on. You had Mark Freeman dropping 34. I mean, it was just a crazy one to be at in general. And I'm probably never going to call a game something like that ever again.
And Blake, I know you're pretty fresh into the news and sports department. Is there a game that you've done that you really like?
So, yeah, definitely haven't called one yet, but we'll see about this weekend.
is this weekend your first?
Yeah, I got Sunday against Bradley, last game.
Everybody make sure you tune in.
I think the weather's supposed to be nice, too, on Sunday.
You can tweet
so
at him. Let him know how he's doing.
Yeah, if you've got any criticisms, tweet, hey,
please,
Bogart at WZND Sports.
Man, you've actually reminded me of something. I used to do the PA, the announcing for the normal Corn Belters, like announcing like high school kids, like when they're coming up to the plate, and the only review I got that day was that this guy sucks. Bring back the old announcer. I was like, man,
getting into this industry, you have to, and Leo talks to me all the time about it whenever we're talking about broadcasters, like, man, like, you kind of have to have an ego to be in this business. And that's so true, because I've been doing the Storm, so this is the first time that I've ever had, like, a team that I've been the primary play-by-play guy for. Like, I'm the guy who does the games, and these Storm fans on the Facebook pages, and I'm just a member of the Facebook pages to, like, catch up on news and stuff. They're always talking about, like, and you have fans and you have enemies. Like, this one woman posted on the Facebook page the other day, because I didn't go on the road last weekend because we had a bunch of ZND stuff to do.
Yeah, the reunion.
It was the first round of the playoffs, so the team president, who used to be a play-by-play guy, crazy career progression, he's doing the game, and this woman is tweeting or commenting on Facebook. She's like, oh my God, I missed Brian so much. She's like, Joey Dwyer is okay, but he's a little frenetic, and he needs to learn the rules.
Yeah.
And I was like, learn the rules of hockey? Like, but then she chipped in. She's like, but he does do good interviews. And I was like, okay. But then, no, that's the thing. Like, people kind of forget that you're, like, a real person who can see this.
I've had that, too. Over the summer when I was broadcasting games for the Oilmen, I had at one point where I'm going out to my car after the game, like, just finished a 3.5-hour broadcast, tired, a little hungry, like, just want to go home for the night. And then I get stopped by one of the players' girlfriends, and she's saying, just ripping on me because I was saying, like, you said my boyfriend struggles with his command and control. Like, yeah, he's got a 3-1 walk to strikeout ratio. He, by definition, does. I'm calling what I see out there. Like, but she was, like, not letting me get to my car, like, berating me while the player's standing right there.
Did you drop gloves?
We did not. No, I was like, I'm sorry, but, like, I'm just saying what I see. Like, it's funny because the guy on the team, like, we were kind of, like, we'd always get, like, hey, what's up? Like, he was a nice guy. Like, and then she just yelled at me for that one thing. It's like, people like to criticize us in our work, but, like, I think it's when you have to put the headset on and the mic, like, it's a lot harder than it looks.
And that's one of the things that I'm most fortunate about with the Storm is I sit. And Leo, you did the game with me, so you know I sit at the top of section 116, right on top of all of the family members.
Yeah.
So all the Storm family sit right underneath me, and
it's a blessing and a curse.
But all the parents love me, man.
Yeah.
Like they.
Yeah, that's my experience too. It's the parents love you. The parents are always nice, but it's the significant others that do not like you. Yeah.
We had a goalie at the beginning of the year who got cut, but his wife would always sit right in front, and I remember I was talking about him. He had like an 865 save percentage, so he wasn't doing great. And I was just, like you said, I was calling when I see, and she's getting so mad. She's like, because I'm like, at one point, what are you doing? Because he's coming out of his crease 20 feet to play the puck. And she, I swear to God, she turns around to me. While I'm doing this broadcast, my crowd mic is sitting right there so I can hear it in my headset. She's like, he's doing his job. I was like, oh my God. But it's the thing that, like you're there to do your job as the broadcaster, but it just sometimes people forget that you have feelings.
Right.
You know? Like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be ripping on the guy. Like, I promise I'll be nicer in the future. It's just sometimes the emotions get involved. Yeah. But anyway, back to the original story. The best game I've ever called, and I'll wrap it up because we're going.
I don't even know what it was now.
We're going so long
at this point.
We're going so long.
No, this is going to be a different show, I feel like, at this point.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, my favorite game that I've ever called, there's a tie because there's a funny one and there's an actual good one. Okay. The funny one was a softball call last year that
I did with our great
friend Rick Schweizer.
Oh, God.
And so me and Eric are sitting there through an hour and a half rain delay. And we have former news and sports intern Anna Marie Schutt in the studio, and we're trying to kill time because we're talking to the softball SID. We're not getting word on whether or not the game's going to get canceled.
If I recall, they like thought they could get it in, like the weather was going to open up for them.
So they thought this was just going to pass. So Eric and I are trying to kill time because we can't just like go to music and then come back when the broadcast starts again because we don't know when it's going to be. So we're just killing time. And I had Eric doing the weather. He was the weatherman.
Weather boy.
And he's reporting. So we're in the tent and it's raining around us. And so he's got the headset on. He'd go stand in the rain. He'd be like, it's raining. And then he'd come back in. And so that was just like the most fun I've ever had. But the best games I've ever done, I've been blessed to do the Storm games this year. But probably the favorite games I've ever done is getting to do ISU soccer for ESPN with Marcel Francis, Joe's roommate, another one of our...
Friend of the show.
Great friend of the show. And we had so much fun doing those games. And it was the first time I ever got to broadcast professionally. And so those games just mean so much to me. And if there's one game that stands out, it was last season when they played against Utah. They lost the game 1-0, but one of the craziest plays is another friend of the show, Ashley Santos.
Of course.
Was
two-time guest.
Was coming across and ran into this girl. And Ashley's not very tall, but Ashley's strong.
Yeah.
And so Ashley slams into this girl. And I was at a loss for words because I'm up in the booth on top of the bleachers at Adelaide Street Field. And this girl's holding her ribs, just screaming in pain, and Ashley's looking at the ref who called a foul. Ashley's looking at him like, I got to the ball first. And so that was a great moment. But yeah, those are a couple of my favorite play-by-plays. Yeah.
And this was a fun segment. I really liked Blake bringing this to the table because we did get to reflect. I'm sure
I could talk like
I could have done
so many more games.
We probably could probably will have to do more for time. I'll talk about that later. But we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're taking things to the diamond. We're gonna talk about some Chicago Cubs because they might be better than we think. I don't know. You never know. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. Leo Starter, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, Blake Borgardt. Now we're back talking about some MLB baseball because there's some stuff happening on the north side of Chicago with the Cubs. I think, you know, we've talked about it in the past. This might be a lost year, but I saw this tweet. I think Joey sent it to me with a snarky comment, but I'm going to read about this stat. After 10 games, here's the 2022 Cubs versus the 2021 Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
Through 10 games, in 2021, they had 4 hits, 49 runs, or 29 runs, 49 hits. I'm struggling right here.
You're good.
In 2022, through 10 games, 6 hits, 48 runs, 92 hits. So this is a Cubs lineup with maybe less star power, but more productivity in the stats that matters more. Those are 3 nitpicked stats, but 3 pretty important ones.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, Joe, talking about this Cubs team, okay, is the Moneyball approach working? Finding underrated value pieces in lesser players, could this be something sustainable? Or do you look at it, they're 6-6 through 12 games. They've played 2 against the Pirates, 4 against the Rockies, and they're playing the Pirates again today. Is this just a hot start against maybe some weaker teams, or is this something sustainable with the Cubs?
I wouldn't say it's like that, because, I mean, they're still at this moment 6-6. They still have their doubts. They still have their struggles. But with what we saw last year, their offense was just horrendous.
Yeah.
And it just made games, like, not watchable. This year, they've scored at least one run in every single game.
And I feel like with the Cubs of old, and as much as I enjoyed Chris Bryant, I liked Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo. I'm not a Cubs fan, but, like, I like those guys. Those are franchise legends. It felt like that core would go through stretches where they don't put the ball in play. They strike out a bunch. They go games with low hits, low runs. With Nick Madrigal, players like that, even Nico Horner, I think the one thing you can say about them is they don't strike out. And even when they're getting out, they're still putting the ball in play. And that when you're putting the ball in play, you're having a higher chance of activity happening, of productivity happening.
Yeah.
And I can maybe this is going to be something in October. It's going to sound bad, but I can kind of see a little bit about what the Cubs are constructing here.
Yeah.
I don't think they fully have it yet, but it makes a little sense. If a lot of things go right.
And when you look at the NL Central, too, you're not looking at a division that really has a clear front runner. Like, the Cardinals are on top right now at 7-3.
Just for now.
And
yeah, like, the Brewers, like, they don't have, like, an offense that pops at all.
Exactly.
They're carried by pitching, and Cardinals, like, didn't really do much either.
And so that's why it's kind of feasible for the Cubs to have a little bit better of a season than I think the fans were anticipating, just because the division, not that it's bad, because there are three teams that have a pretty good talent on the squad. It's just there's a lot of shakeup that can happen within these standings, because you don't really know who's going to be able to pop off.
And what Leo's talking about, like, bringing in these guys, I mean, Clint Frazier hasn't done well for the Cubs so far, but Villar, he's stepped in, done very well for the Cubs, getting in on base a lot, actually, for Chicago. His on-base percentage peaking over, like, 450 at the moment, going up to 450. But just signing those guys and not really making a big move in free agency besides, say, a Suzuki, which, I mean, at this moment right now, it's arguably probably the best signing from anyone, best offseason move over the offseason. But, I mean, that also had a lot of doubt, because it is always difficult getting these guys from Japan, especially who play a long period of time, because Suzuki's already 27 years old, and he could be NL Rookie of the Year. I mean, he won NL Player of the Week and everything. So his power and what he's been able to do with Chicago and with the Cubs, like, I said it last week or 2 weeks ago when you were doing opening like the spring training opening week talk we were doing. I was kind of saying, like, everyone was saying it, though, too. Like, expect him to not show up and show power right away in the MLB, but so far he's shown that. And I think other guys are feeding off that, and you still have people struggling at the plate, like Willy Contreras a little bit, but he's showing other areas.
I would say about Suzuki, it's kind of the same thing about when Jose Abreu came over at 29 years old. You take a player that's already a pro, bring him over, they can kind of make that transition a lot easier. And I think he could really do some big things. And you mentioned that they have guys that are struggling, but I think if you squint, you can see where the pieces are. That this, quote, rebuild, they might not become contenders out of it, but they could be a playoff team at least in the next couple years if you build around Suzuki, you build around Madrigal, Horner. They're still going to need a lot of other work. They're going to have to replenish the farm system, but
yeah, and the they have the revenue and money at some point to be able to do that.
You want to hear sad thing I heard on a podcast?
About the Cubs?
About the Cubs is...
About Ricketts?
If you took their current payroll, took what Chris Bryant signed for, Anthony Rizzo and Javi Baez, what they all signed for, they'd still be under the luxury tax.
Like, I mean, yeah, that it is kind of annoying, but I mean, at this point, we're past those guys, but what the Cubs were coming from with Ricketts, it felt like they were saying we didn't have the money to do it. And Leo, as you're saying that, I mean, they obviously had the money. I mean, the one I'm just really upset about, just because how much time he has left in the MLB, would be Chris Bryant. I mean, Anthony Rizzo was your captain. He was your guy and everything.
But he's over 30 years old and has a bad back.
Yeah, he has a bad back.
You don't want to give out a big contract to a player
so,
like that.
I mean, that's the one thing. But, I mean, the thing that's really just is killing the team right now is just pitching in general.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at your starters, really.
You maybe have 2.5 starters.
Then at this moment, you and really don't have a lot.
And not even guys who have been producing well this year.
All their starters, besides Drew Smyly, who's had a couple decent performances, like going like 4-3 innings to start games.
Now, I got to tell you, talking about the bullpen, you got the save from David Robertson. I think that was last night or the night before. Mm-hmm. We've seen that movie on the South Side, David Robertson. Yeah. This is all smoke and mirrors. God. That is not made to last. But it's just, that's what kind of cracks me up about this Cubs pitching staff, is because you look at it and it's a bunch of like early 2010s guys that you're like, he's still in the league, and Robertson is like one of those
and
great examples.
They just traded Jesse Chavez, who has struggled, and he's only made 3 appearances this year. He struggled a little bit, 5 2/3 innings, but last year he had one of his best years ever with the Braves, coming out of the bullpen, like sub like 2.250 ERA around that mark. And I mean, a little shocked to see that, especially for a guy they got from Atlanta. Sean Newcomb, who got designated for assignment on Tuesday, but yet the Cubs are like, actually, don't do that. We're going to trade for him and get rid of about a 15-year MLB veteran almost than Jesse Chavez. So, I mean, that's a little bit of a question mark at this moment, especially what the return is. It just really doesn't seem any value at all in that area.
And also, just looking through the Cubs pitchers, I just wanted to point out a couple great names. You've got Wade Miley and Drew Smyly. And then a dude named Lock St. John in AAA.
Sounds like a pirate.
Right?
Yeah. And like, we got Justin Steele. He's going to be stealing all that stuff out there.
Roman Wick.
There's some good names out there, but it's a fun team. It's more fun than last year. I mean, There's way too early to determine anything.
No, but
like, so,
I mean,
but,
that's
yeah.
where I'm going with
yeah.
the Cubs.
Yeah, but I mean, that's how you got to do baseball. Like, you can't assume, you can make your predictions, you could say what's going right now, especially the beginning of the year. So
I'm just saying, I'm looking at it and seeing they have guys that do some things right that could be different from this next core. Mm-hmm. Madrigal may never be a superstar, but he's going to be someone that can be productive, that can get on base and not strike out. And that's what I felt like the Cubs organizational philosophy
left,
was
like,
the opposite of
that.
They had all
like
these
that.
Guys that had high strikeouts and low contact, and now maybe they got some of that. And,
Madrigal's still pretty young. Nico, 25 years old, going in that area. So the good middle infield, young, and bring some excitement on the north side. That's for sure.
And there's a lot of other excitement in Chicago. We're going to take a break. When we come back, though, we're going to be seeing some red, talking about the Chicago Bulls. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to the Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND.
There's Dan Muller bringing you back to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Love Leo Stodher, Jody Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and Blake Borgart here. Guys, I think this is the time in the show for overreactions, because as of right now, April 21st, 2022, the Chicago Bucks and the Chicago Bulls.
Whoa! Hey, you're in the near a little bit over there.
That one's making the blooper reel. But the Chicago Bulls and Milwaukee Bucks are tied at one game apiece. Bulls in five?
Bulls in five? Blake's been saying it since the moment he got in here. I mean,
book it, man.
Bulls in five. Okay, I don't know about book it. Are you actually confident they could do it in five?
Well, now that I know that Middleton is out, that takes away a huge defensive piece for them. And I love that they're just getting smaller, man. And with the Bulls, sorry, I just made the same mistake that Leo did. The strength of the Bucks is that their spacing is so tight. You got Brooke Lopez out there running with Chris Middleton, Giannis. That front court is practically impenetrable. And now that Vooch is looking like he's putting it all together, I'm so excited to see what this team is going to do Friday night.
And after the first game where the Bulls lost, you look at that game and you kind of have to realize that it's not going to be like that every game. The awful shooting nights for all three of the Bulls' main offensive forces of DeMar, LaVine, and
a lot of it is with the defense, but a lot of it, they were just open shots.
And they were just missing. And you have to know that that's not going to happen again. Like, all three of those guys aren't going to have bad nights on the same night.
If you look at it, game one, DeRozan was 6 for 25 from the field. Vucevic, 9 for 27. LaVine, 6 for 19. Flip that to game two, where you got DeRozan, 16 for 31. Vooch, 10 for 18. And then Zach was 7 for 13. It was like night and day. The Bulls were getting their good shots. But I think one of the big takeaways was how Alex Caruso then came in last night, made some great plays down the stretch too, was that when the complimentary players start making those plays, that really helped the Bulls a ton, because you got 24 points in both games from Vooch, 41 last night from DeRozan, and then 20 from Zach. But just now that the whole team is producing, that's even better. Pat Williams has made some incredible plays too, and it just seems like they're finally playing as a team, even with all the injuries they've had. Really,
the Patrick Williams development has been huge, especially the first game. Only got three shots, and they need Patrick Williams to shoot the ball more, especially not just at the end of the game. I mean, I feel like that's what it's come down to, especially in game one. He was like putting up shots at the end. So yesterday he comes out and puts up on 9 shots. So I mean, 6 more, not a whole lot of improvement from the first game and things, but you're talking about Caruso, Leo, in game one, him and Coby White, and it was like the third quarter, end of the second quarter, they were trying to get back into the game, and it was those two that were just putting the game like on their backs. They were putting the team on their backs, making sure that the Bulls were staying competitive in that game one. And then Caruso, what he did yesterday, I mean, Giannis was just saying, like, I'm not exactly sure what it was, but he was saying how like annoying he is playing, because he's just such a good defender and such a good energy he brings for the Bulls. I mean, it provides anything that no one else can, especially for Chicago. I mean, it's much needed.
Well, he also provides that championship caliber that he got with the Lakers. I saw him, there was a video in the locker room right after the game, and he was in there saying, hey, they're going to come back hungrier after this. It's just, it's the nature of it. We're tied 1-1. They're down a game now. They're going to come back hungrier. But it's just him talking to all those young guys who have no playoff experience whatsoever, and he's getting their minds right to get deeper into this series and take it in five, like I was saying.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, having Caruso, too, is such a bonus, because really, it's just him and DeRozan are like the only two that have playoff experience on this team. So many players on this team are making their playoff debuts this year. Even think about someone like Zach LaVine, where he's played so much basketball, but he really hasn't played too many meaningful games in the NBA. Like, most of the championships he's played for have been in college or in the Olympics. Yeah. So now he's getting his first taste of playoff basketball. It's so important to have guys that have been there before and that have won rings before.
And we're talking about winning rings, and the Bucks, they're coming off, you know, the NBA championship last year. They won it all. A lot of it with Giannis. A lot of it with them, though, was them being healthy. Now Middleton's going down, and that's a big thing. I mean, with the Bucks being healthy last year, a lot of it was with just other teams that were hurt. I mean, I know a lot of people were taking credibility away from the Bucks because it was such an injury-riddled playoffs and everything. But, I mean, they're going to come back hungry. But also, this Bucks team, even last year and the year before, they didn't have a lot of energy in certain games. I remember Shaq was telling last night after in the post-game show, just like, yeah, when you win your first one, because he's won, what, three or four, Shaq? When you win your first one, you come back the next year, and that's the one year where you really don't have, like, that energy that you had from previous years. So that, I wonder how that's going to factor.
And, I mean, we're talking about how bad the Bucks are going to miss Chris Middleton, but they have so many other great supporting stars.
But Middleton is
he's an all-star. Bobby Portis is...
But he's also hurt, too, a little.
But, I mean, he's still playing. And then Drew Holiday is an incredible defender. Yeah. Then you have Brooke Lopez. Like, you have guys on this Bucks team. They're not going to wilt and go away because Chris Middleton is out. They're just going to have to change their game. But I think that does, no pun intended, put the ball in the Bulls' court where now they can kind of control it a little bit because the Bucks might be on their heels.
But Giannis, it's just like...
And he is different. He's just
that
guy.
It's just so hard to stop. I mean, that guy just gets the ball and he just runs right at... they can't even get back in the transition because Vucevic is sometimes so slow. And even trying to double-team them up just opens up their shooter. It's hard.
And that's kind of the thing about playing one of these just legendary superstars. And people said it in The Last Dance about Jordan, is you're not going to stop him. You just have to try to contain him. But Giannis is going to put up 20 to 25 minimum.
Oh, easily.
And you can't stop him from doing that. You have to game plan around him.
Right.
There was a moment in game one where he drove. There were three guys that converged into the lane. He threw it off the backboard to himself and put it in. It's like, that's not a regular human thing. Like, you're not going to stop that guy from scoring. You have to be able to stop the guys around him from giving him support.
Yeah. So let's talk things coming back to Chicago now, playing tomorrow night. What do you need to see from the Bulls? Because obviously, you know, it's going to be a crazy atmosphere. Bulls fans flooded the arena in Milwaukee. It's going to be electric in the United Center. While winning two would be nice, it's probably not realistic. What do you want to see from these next two games against the Bulls to try to make this a series win?
Levine's got to put it all together, man. He's playing the first meaningful basketball in his entire career. He's up for a contract. Is it next year that he's up for a contract?
Maybe, after next year, I think.
Yeah, something like that. He's going to be coming for that Supermax contract, and if he wants that payday, he's got to show up now, prove it why he deserves it. I mean, 20 points is nothing to scoff at, but when you got DeMar putting up 41, I feel like he's still leaving some good shots out on the floor and some points on the board.
And that's perfectly valid, too. Like, you need him to produce because really going into the season, we were talking about how it was going to be Zach's year to take over because he kind of got to break out on the national stage at the Olympics and that he was going to be the star. But it's been DeRozan that's kind of taken over as that number one. But if Levine shows he's capable of producing as a real number one, a real star player like he did last season, it could be a completely different series.
Yeah, and the things Levine's been able to do, he had those tough stretch of games. I mean, during like February, January time for the Bulls. But ever since the Olympics, he's been definitely a dominant piece for them. What I've been trying to say the past couple of months whenever people bring things up is just the Patrick Williams thing. Coming back as like a Kyle Schwarber-esque, like you get injured at the beginning of the year, come back for the playoffs, the big final couple of games. And if he's able to succeed, then this team will succeed because he provides that defense, especially going up against Giannis. Next round, it's either going to be KD or Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and then you go down the other teams and that's who you're going to be putting Patrick Williams on because he's probably their best low interior defender. And he's also going to be able to score. And he's improved over from the first game to the second game. And I think he's going to slowly kind of get back into things. And if you're looking outside the top three big scorers, I think he's like the most valuable. It's hard to put Caruso out of there.
One of the big knocks that I've seen on the Bulls and a lot of the teams in the NBA playoffs this year just floating around online is – somebody made this video of, in the past 20 years, how many teams have won an NBA title without a top five player in the league? And this guy said arguably two. The 04 Pistons is one, and then like maybe the Spurs of, 2012, whenever they won
when
that.
Tim Duncan was outside top five.
Exactly. And so the Bulls clearly do not have a top five guy in the league.
But you could maybe look at that, because DeRozan was in the MVP conversation this year. He's having one of the top seasons in the league, but isn't one of the top five skill players. I get what you're saying,
and so,
but you have that guy that's hot at the right time.
That one's like borderline too, though. And, like top five, because it's not of their career, it's of their season. And DeRozan is definitely right around top five for just this year.
Yeah,
but he definitely has fallen off.
And if you're thinking about that, it's how can the Bulls kind of buck this narrative and win with
pun intended.
I didn't even mean that one. How can they get rid of this narrative and win with an ensemble cast rather than being carried by a superstar? And I think that's the big hurdle in this superstar-driven league, is being able to distribute well enough that they don't have to be carried by DeMarvelous putting up 41.
And I think the thing that goes off that, though, is what they've surrounded DeMarvelous with and Zach LaVine with and Vucevic with. We haven't even brought up the factor that Lonzo Ball being out this series and probably the rest of the playoffs and how much that could have changed without Lonzo Ball. If Lonzo was in this, game one could have been different. I mean, game two the Bulls came out with, especially now with Middleton out, like this is a completely different looking series. But the thing we've seen success with is this year, or this game, this series with the Bucks, is that they've won the game because coming into this year or this series, the Bucks or the Bulls were really struggling against the top teams that were over 500, and they put up the fight, and it's honestly shocked a lot of people. I feel like I turn on TV and they're talking about the Warriors, Steph Curry, they're talking about KD and the Celtics series. I mean, it seems like the Bulls are just, you know, going under the radar
really
right
expecting
now. Yeah, no one's expecting them, and it's kind of been like that the whole year.
But that's what's crazy. Think about how when the Bulls were at their best, how good they were, and it still feels like nobody's giving them any legitimacy this season.
It's that the one rough stretch they had in the season, everybody just forgot that they existed and went to the usual suspects in the East to look at who's going to come out of the conference.
I think we're sticking by this. Red Zone prediction, Bulls in five. Right?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe six. Okay.
I'm going to say.
Because you're looking down the court and you just still see Giannis.
I'm saying Bulls in seven because they've had the best home attendance this year. They've had the best away attendance and they stole one in Milwaukee.
And they're,
I'm saying Bucks in
seven.
That
was a home crowd almost during
the
game.
And
during the free throws yesterday.
The Bucks got the worst pull because you are, what, an hour away from downtown Chicago? That is the worst pull for the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs is having your building half filled with kids who drove up from the north side. 100%. That is awful for them.
Yeah, but just kind of looking rest of the playoffs, I mean, they'll have to take on the Celtics or the Nets. Another tough matchup, and then either Sixers, Hawks, not the Hawks, Heat, not either the Raptors. So, I mean, those teams, they don't really match up well for Chicago, but we could see how things kind of get on moving.
I'm bought in. I think I could feel, I'm going full Bulls meatball.
I know, I think I am now too. Like, it's exciting.
After the one win, we're just locked in.
One of my friend's dads, my friend Ben Rosen, his dad tweeted out, Bulls in six, I have a feeling, and he kind of got ratioed on Twitter. I remember saying this to him, like, I want to... Before the series,
ooh,
because I want to feel about the Bulls the way your dad feels.
Yeah.
And we were both laughing about it, but now I'm saying it, Bulls in six, Bulls in six. There we go. But you hear the music playing, that's all we have for the show. We didn't go the way we planned. We maybe we'll have that Ali Schrock interview coming at you next week, some other time. But we had a solid show. We talked some Redbird baseball. Blake Borgart came on. We talked about our favorite sports memories. We talked some Cubs and some Bulls. The penultimate Red Zone episode with this crew. We'll be bringing the grand finale next week. We have some big things planned for that, so you're going to want to hear that. But until then, don't go missing us too much. You've been listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.